Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During our Q&A session, you may press star 1 on your touch-tone phone if you would like to ask a question. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now I'd like to turn the meeting over to Scott Bates, so you may begin.
Well, good morning, everyone. This is Deputy Secretary of the State, Scott Bates. I'm speaking to you in place of Secretary Merrill because she's been she's talking with some legislative leadership today at this very moment. So I get the honor of speaking with all of you. Right now there are about 345 local elected officials. That's town clerks, registrars, and maybe a few for selectmen and mayors as well. And I think that goes to something very important, which is that obviously in the conduct of elections here and across the country, we're facing unprecedented challenges. The COVID crisis, clearly, the ongoing threat to cybersecurity, and other societal challenges that we have. So it's great that you're all here. And to meet that unprecedented challenge, we have formed unprecedented partnerships, and that's in great thanks to your leadership at ROVAC and the town clerks. I think back to the second week of March when this started happening, and we had meetings with your leadership. And since then, we have had, this will be the seventh call that we've had with all of you. And in addition to that, Ted Bromley and our elections team have had eight meetings, virtual meetings, with committees on the implementation of the election plan that we're all working through. So those committees have been making great contributions, and we thank you for that partnership. Our office has issued 23 individual sets of guidance since March 1st on things ranging from grants that are available to primary petitions, supervised absentee ballots, poll workers. So there's a lot of information out there, but we're going to keep talking about it. And in that spirit, two things. One is today your leadership has assembled questions from all of you that were submitted. And Ted Bromley, our head of elections, will be answering all those questions. And then after that, he'll be taking additional questions for clarification. Now, there were a lot of questions, and we tried to combine some because the two organizations had similar thoughts on their minds. So I think there's about 53, but it's well worth hanging in there and listening. And if you don't hear your question addressed or it spurs further questions, please, at the end of us going through it, you can ask those questions too. And finally, I'd make an appeal to all of you to do two things in terms of what you can do for us. One is our office is going to be in touch soon because we are working with the Connecticut National Guard to provide cybersecurity assessments for all of you to really help you figure out where you might have vulnerabilities or where you might have needs and see how we can meet those needs together. And then the second thing is submitting your Safe Polls plan. I believe we have plans in from about half of the municipalities in this state. We're working with others, but please do submit those or just call us and ask what it's all about, because once we get that done with you, we can get some resources flowing in support of our common challenge, which is making sure we deliver on democracy for all of our people in the midst of a lot of tumult and turmoil out there. We can at least make sure that everybody has their vote registered and their voice heard, and they can believe in our institutions. So thank you very much. It's an honor to be partnering with all of you. And without further ado, my colleague, who I am just honored to work with, Ted Bromley. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Deputy Bates. Okay, so as the deputy said, there were quite a few questions that were submitted, and I wanted to thank Sue Larson and Anna for playing point on that for us and gathering, working with their organizations and gathering up those questions and submitting them to us in advance so that we had some time to take a look at them. as the deputy said, there were a few duplicates. I know that many of you tried to ferret through them and eliminate the duplicates, which was very helpful. But between the two organizations, there were, so we did combine a few. So if you don't hear your exact question, it doesn't mean that we haven't or won't answer it. It's just that it's probably combined with something else. So just please, you know, be attentive to the answers, and I'm sure that pretty much all of the questions that were posed to us, we were able to provide at least some type of answer to. So the first question, or the first group of questions, we're talking about the capability of the town clerk's office and the capability of processing all of the applications for absentee ballot that came in, and whether or not the 24-hour turnaround time would be in effect. And so basically the answer to that one is that, well, we expect, or you can expect, more absentee ballots this year. I think that, as the deputy said, we've provided numerous resources to assist in the process. We have the mail house. We have the PPE purchases. We have the financial assistance for extra help that you may need above and beyond your normal staff. We've also worked with the governor's office to add or join with their volunteer program, which allows individuals to express their interest in helping out during the virus. And one of the options is to help out locally with an election, either in one of your offices or as a poll worker. So as those individuals come in, we will forward them to you so that you can take a look at the individuals who are interested and solicit them for additional help if you need to. So in terms of the 24-hour time frame, the mail house is prepared to issue absentee ballots on a rolling basis once that information is put into centralized voter registration system. The data will be sent to the mail house, and they'll be able to react to the ballots from there. The mail house does not have direct access to centralized voter reg. They are only getting a file from our office as defined by our office. The next question talks about what happens if COVID-19 interferes with the ability to work in our office. So as the deputy said, there's quite a bit of guidance out there on that, both from us and from the CDC. We've also been providing you additional resources that I noted just for the question above. And we would encourage you to, you know, be working with your local municipality. You're in the best position to know how your town is going to run, how your town currently runs, whether or not, given the fact that, you know, I guess we're over the curve in Connecticut, whether or not additional closures or whether your town is going to slowly start to open is occurring. So it's that question both is, you know, the resources that we provide, but also, you know, comes back to you in terms of how you're going to work locally to sort of plan those things out. The next question is, what are the recommendations and standards required for the mailboxes, and do they apply to all towns? The drop boxes that we have purchased will be issued to every town in Connecticut, with our largest 30-some-odd towns getting two of them. The drop boxes that we purchased are boxes that are used in many states, and they are compliant with the most strict of the state of California and Department of Homeland Security requirements. In fact, Department of Homeland Security recommends that if you buy a mailbox or a ballot box, that it complies with the state of California. So they have referenced the state of California's stringent requirements. So the ballot boxes that we are buying are compliant with that. In fact, they're used in California. The ballot boxes a resource in regard to the question above about the ability of the offices if they're closed. The ballot box is also a resource for those offices who are having trouble operating during the COVID. So if your office is closed, the ballot box is going to be something that is actually going to be a resource for you to be able to use. And lastly, the EO, the recent executive order that was issued by the governor regarding the absentee ballot, specifically includes the use of the drop boxes within that executive order. So given the executive order is considered law right now, the use of the drop box for this August primary is something that is mandatory at this point. Okay. The next question is the drop box capable of being locked, and is it required? Yes, it is capable of being locked. The ballot box comes with a distinct and a unique set of keys, one set of keys that will be held by the town clerk. That it provides the access to the ballot box. Okay. So the next question is the mail house secure? So yes, it is. The mail house that we are using is a mail house that is based in Rhode Island as well as numerous other states, including Florida. This is not a mail house that is operating out of somebody's garage. They are a quite large mail house, recognized. I was just on a conference call with the U.S. Postal Service, and they were actually excited to hear that we were using, the mail house because they have quite a good relationship with them. The mail house has conducted numerous ballot services, for other states. They've been an existing state of Connecticut contractor for over 30 years. And in that 30 years, they've done things such as processing state income tax refund checks, handling Social Security numbers, and all those other kinds of things that Department of Revenue Services requires of a mail house within their 30-year process. So although they haven't done ballot services in Connecticut, they've done it in other states, and they do have experience dealing with sensitive information through their 30 years with contact with Connecticut. And the mail house does not have direct access to centralized voter reg. As I had said before, they will be getting the info directly from our office via a feed or a file that we provide to the mail house, and it is not something that they're going to be able to just simply log into voter reg and grab themselves. The next question, will a standard guideline or flowchart be created that will list who's responsible for each step of the process and the date that each step needs to be completed? As the deputy said, we have been working with the various COVID response committees, which comprise a portion of town clerks and a portion of the registrars. And in those committees, which we just released a few days ago, is what I call the absentee ballot roadmap, which I think is similar to what this question is talking about in terms of a flowchart, as it details the steps of the absentee ballot process, including the use of the new centralized voter reg functions that are involved with it. And it details in terms of that document also what who is responsible for each one of the steps. So I think a review of that absentee ballot roadmap will answer many of those flowchart questions. Okay, the next question, how does the mail house receive the absentee ballots for each city or town? So the mail house is already working with both Adkins and LHS regarding the ballots and how they're going to receive the ballots directly from the printer. So the idea is that the printer will be sending a majority of their ballots, the absentee ballots, directly to the mail house. They will send a portion of those ballots directly to the town in case you have emergencies or additional ballots or those types of things. And then, of course, the printer will also send the regular ballots, the polling place ballots, directly to the town. Okay. Will the mail house be responsible for reissuing another ballot if an elector claims that they never received it? No. So in the absentee ballot roadmap, we cover situations like this. And so the mail house is responsible for issuing the first ballot. And if there are special circumstances or additional ballots that are need to be issued, that would rest with the town clerk locally to follow up with those types of issues, whether it be an additional ballot, a replacement ballot, military ballots, those types of things. Okay, the next question. Since the mail house will place the appropriate ballot kits into the mailing envelopes, will they also be responsible for tracking the number of ballots they receive from each town? So yes, the ballots, both the applications and the ballots, are going to be tracked in a couple of different ways. First, obviously, by using centralized voter reg, the applications are going to be tracked, and centralized voter reg has the ability for you to print off a report that tells you each and every application that was issued and accepted by the town clerks. In addition to that, the absentee ballots that are issued will be tracked by the mail house. We will receive information regarding those ballots that have been issued. And then once they're issued, voted, and returned by the voter, of course, centralized voter reg tracks those coming back. So the crux of the question about whether or not the mail house will track the ballots that they've issued, the answer to that, of course, is yes. The next question, how do we deal with ballots dropped off in the ballot box that belong to another town? So two things about that. So as part of this entire plan, one of the things that our office is going to do is going to do a statewide public information campaign about not only the increase in absentee ballot opportunities, but also in terms of the use of the ballot boxes and the return of the absentee ballots. However, should somebody put a ballot from one town in the ballot box of another, then the town clerk who receives it should notify and make arrangements with the other town to be able to get that appropriately picked up. Okay. After the clearinghouse uploads the town clerk data and mails the ballots, will the clerks receive a report confirmation from the clearinghouse? So again, the answer to that is yes. And then the follow-up was, can we run a report on CVRS each day to cross-check? And the answer to that is yes as well. There are reports on centralized voter reg regarding the applications that you've entered into the system and the information regarding who was sent to the mail house regarding the applications. The next question, what about overseas voters and people who qualify for email ballots? So again, this is one of those special circumstances that we noted in the absentee ballot roadmap. Each town clerk will continue to handle those military email ballots or overseas email ballots locally. Question, how do we handle a ruined ballot? Well, that would be the same way that you would handle a ballot currently that would be ruined absent a COVID virus. So many of the absentee ballot processes, procedures, and safeguards surrounding absentee ballots have not changed. Really, the only thing that has changed is the issuance of the applications and then the mail house helping the town clerks out, handing out the ballots. Other than that, all of the procedural safeguards remain in place. So should a ballot come back ruined and somebody needs an additional ballot, you would handle that in the exact same way you would have last year or the year before when somebody comes to you and says that their ballot was ruined. Next question. Once all the applications are put into CVRS, will the mail house generate labels or print all label data directly onto envelopes? So the mail house will print the supplies on demand. So as they use the as they receive information from you all and the files that we provide from Centralized Voter Reg, as they print the envelopes, they will actually print directly on the envelope all of the information that is required, including a barcode, serial number, voter ID number, et cetera. So they will not be generating labels. They'll print everything directly onto the envelopes. Next question. Will they also print the mailing address of the town clerk on the serial and numbered envelope? The answer to that is yes. All the information regarding the town clerks and the return information will be printed right on the envelopes. Okay. So the next question, let's see. Will the mail house be responsible for mailing each town's polling location sample ballots to Secretary of State? Are there any scenarios where the town clerk must issue absentee ballots to an elector? So again, the absentee ballot roadmap that we put together does list at the very end of it a few special scenarios where the town clerks still do have to issue absentee ballots locally. Those would include, as I just said, the email or military ballots, any second ballot that an individual requests, and I guess somebody could request, I guess, an additional ballot or something of that nature. But I think the important thing to keep in mind is that, everybody will be getting an application, and the applications that we issue will have a barcode right on the application, which will do two things. One, it'll enable you to better process the application as it comes back, but it'll also readily identify for you that the application is one that was issued by the mail house, because normal applications are not going to have that barcode. Okay, next question. When will the absentee ballot applications be mailed out to the voters by the mail house? So right now we're looking at the second or third week of June to get those applications out and on the street. The theory behind that is that we want to give two things. We want to give our statewide voter education initiative time to work, meaning that the applications will be out into the general public for about a month before absentee ballots are actually issued in July, but also the month provides a nice cushion for the absentee ballot applications to come back to the various towns. So we're looking to spread the workload out, as opposed to issuing them at some time in July, where there's a compacted schedule, where those ballots and where those absentee ballots all come back to you in, you know, a week or so. So we're trying to sort of accommodate that by giving more time with the actual application. Okay. The next question is: if a town clerk receives an application for an absentee ballot and enters the information to the CVRS the same day, will the mail house mail out the ballot within 24 hours? So the answer to that is absolutely the goal of that is that we continually give to the mail house the information as you enter it into Centralized Voter Reg, and then the mail house reacts to those and mailing out those ballots as they come in. Okay. The next question, since adding COVID-related anxiety as a reason to obtaining an application, do we have to monitor the reasons for the sickness and decide whether or not to issue an absentee ballot? Well, the answer to that is no, because you have to remember that there are actually two things in play. Prior to the governor issuing his executive order, we issued our opinion that talked about underlying illnesses such as diabetes and things like that that are in an increased risk if you go to the polls and contract the COVID virus. But in addition to that, the governor issued an EO, which has the effect of law and basically removed the barriers to the absentee balloting process. So basically, related anxiety, fear of COVID, or any of the other underlying conditions are all covered by that executive order. So there is no reason to monitor the reason or the sickness to decide to issue an absentee ballot. Is there a special process to get the scanners connected to centralized Voter Edge to get to work, or do they just plug them into the computer that has CVR on it and they instantly know how to scan and print? So as many of the town clerks out there can attest, there is a barcode scanning reader function built into centralized Voter Edge. It does work. Many towns have used it before. So if a town does purchase a scanner or a handheld barcode reader, they would be able to scan any returned envelope and any returned ballot that comes into them. Okay. Will the mailhouse send applications to the nursing homes? So again, anybody that is listed as an enrolled party member, an active enrolled party member on Centralized Voter Reg will get an application, and the application will be either sent to the residence address or to the mailing address if the residence address is overridden by the mailing address. So basically, if there is both addresses, then we use the mailing address. If there's only one address, then, of course, we only use that address. Okay, next question. Will town clerks still follow up with an elector who did not complete their application properly? The answer to that is yes. If an application is returned and is incomplete in any way, just like you would today, you would still do that with any application that comes in. And again, just to reiterate, remember that the mailhouse is simply mailing out applications for absentee ballot and also mailing out the ballots. Once those two tasks are done, all of the normal absentee ballot processes, protections, and safeguards remain in place, and the town clerk's duties regarding those also all remain in place. Who will handle all the calls from people who have never voted by absentee ballot? Will the mailhouse? No, the mailhouse will not handle those calls. Each town clerk will be responsible for the questions from their voters. And again, we will also try to alleviate some of that by conducting our statewide public information outreach campaign as well. But it will be the town clerks that are responsible for assisting their voters. Okay. Question. Have the voters completed their registrars completed their canvas? Who will be receiving back the thousands of undeliverables of absentee ballot applications sent by the mailhouse for follow-up? So, yes, the registrars have completed their annual canvas. And the addresses, in terms of the undeliverables, we're going to do everything that we can to prevent that. Not only have the registrars completed their canvas, obviously we are involved in the ERIC project, which also assists and validating addresses, and the mailhouse also has a relationship with the U.S. Postal Service, where they will vet all of the addresses that they are using before they send them to make sure that they're all valid addresses in an effort to cut down on the return applications. Okay. All right. The next question is, what should be our ballot order? And what I took that question to mean is to, well, I'll go through, well, there's two questions here, so I think I'm going to cover either one. So the first is that in terms of the ballots to be ordered, what we're doing is we're recommending to order at least 80% of your electorate for both absentee ballots and polling place ballots. And we understand that that may result in a boatload of extra ballots being thrown out at the end of the day. But just as this pandemic is new to you, you also have to remember that it's brand new to all of us, including our office. So there's no way for us to have a crystal ball. You know, even calling our other colleagues in other states results in a vastly different array of answers. You know, some states have seen an exponential increase in absentee ballots and other states have not. So we can't even use trends really from other states. And so the safest thing to do is to order more and you know, have to dispose of them rather than run out. And so if we order 80% of your electorate for both absentee ballots and polling place ballots, and then we provide 80% of that to the mail house and send 20% to you as a backup, we think that that's a sensible way to operate. The second question about ballot order is, how will the ballot look? So this is sort of the order of the candidates. So we covered both because we weren't sure about the question. So basically, just as it, for those veteran registrars and town clerks that are out there, you all know that this is not something that is new. The presidential preference primary used to be held on the same day as our town committee primaries for years. And so we already do have ballot structure, ballot order, set up for that. So basically what happens is the presidential preference primary is on the first row all the way over to the left, then separated by a big black line. Then the rest of the offices are listed beginning directly to the right of that big black line and going right to the ballot. So just like prior to when we used to do the presidential preference and the town committee together, we will follow the same processes, which is that, you know, the ballot order will be determined by lot for the presidential preference primary and listed in that way. And then to the right of the black line, the endorsed candidate will be listed on line A with an asterisk and then listed in alpha order going top to bottom. Okay, who will issue serial numbers? So again, as stated in the absentee ballot roadmap that we issued, the serial number will be automatically generated by the centralized voter registration system and sent to the mail house. So to the extent that you are taking in and scanning applications that come into you, there'll be a special module developed for that where much of the information, well, actually all of the information is pre-populated once you scan that application, and also a serial number will be generated that will be sent to the mail house, and that serial number that's automatically generated will be printed on the envelope that is used by the mail house. To the extent that you get an application in locally and you enter a serial number in that is not automatically generated, that serial number will also go to the mail house and will also be printed automatically on any absentee ballot envelope that is issued. Will the official books be done the same way? The answer to that is yes. Where do we store the returned ballots? So once the ballots are returned by the voter, the processing of the ballots will remain the same as currently in statute. None of the protocols or security procedures have changed. There's been a lot of question and debate about whether or not we issue the ballots in a flat package or whether we fold them. Actually, individuals even within our committees have different thoughts on that. And so I don't have a direct answer to that yet in terms of folding or not folding a ballot. But either way, the storage protocols for the security of the ballots will remain the same, whether they're folded or not. And if a town for some reason needs additional storage that is not available in terms of like a bin or something, they can certainly submit that with their Safe Polls plan for reimbursement. Will town clerks still be required to sort these ballots by street last name? To ensure accuracy, many town clerks generate a CVRS report before the checkoff of each ballot to assure they are accounted for. Okay. So yes, you'll still be required to, again, the protocols and safeguards that are in place for our absentee ballots remain the same. So any protocol that requires the ballots to be stored in a particular manner will still be followed. Any of the storage and security requirements will still be followed. Pre-sorting and pre-checking of the official checklist will still be followed to ensure the integrity of the absentee balloting process. Given the number of absentee ballots we are anticipating, can we start opening the ballots in advance of primary day? No. In terms of the pre-sorting or the processing of the ballots and the safeguards and security, all of that has remained unchanged. If a town hall is still closed to the public, what do we do about in-person absentee balloting? So we've sent an application to every eligible member, every eligible party member. So we hope that much of that work will be done through the mail with you. To the extent that the virus still exists in August or at the end of July, to prevent town halls from still being open, and we can certainly reassess this situation. But as I said before, you know, this situation is new to all of us. Things are opening, you know, as we speak. The governor is being diligent and safe about the way he does things. And so to the extent that we get to the middle of July, the end of July and August, when absentee ballots are truly become available, the situation may have vastly changed in your town. And so we all have to be prepared for the worst, but then hope for the best. And so we will have to continue to assess that situation as we move forward. Okay, so this question is, what are the size of the envelopes, the applications being mailed to the town clerks? We're exploring automated letter openers. Once the application is received in the town clerk's office, will CVRS be dramatically enhanced and updated? So again, the centralized voter reg changes are detailed in the absentee ballot roadmap, in terms of what we've worked with the Town Clerks Association to be able to do for you in terms of automating much of the process. In terms of the letter size, at least for the application, that is going to be 8.5, a number 10 envelope. What is that, 8.5 by 11, I think. That'll be a regular envelope. The only difference is whether or not the actual ballots themselves will be mailed as flat packages or folded. And again, I said we're still working with both groups on that question. The next question, Ballot folding is a concern since the fold must not fall on any oval. So again, I just talked about that. We're still dealing with whether or not the ballots are going to be folded. But to the extent that they are folded, the ballots will be folded by the current printers, so LHS or Atkins. So they are well aware of the folding principles involved with the ballots. Okay, the next couple of questions are evolving around centralized voter reg. Are there any guidelines for the towns to follow who may have never used the centralized voter registration system so we can learn? So two things. So first, yes, as we get deeper into June, we'll certainly be looking to offer central CVRS classes remotely to the new users. We've recently been trained on using Zoom and some other remote products to do training on. So we will definitely be organizing that. But to the extent also that there is something that you wanted to take a look at right off of the front page of Centralized Voter Reg without even logging in, are separate manuals, one for the registrars and one for the town clerks. And I know that the manuals don't cover everything, but at least it would get you familiar with some of the screens and how they looked and things of that nature before we get to those remote classes. So how will we enter information into CVRS when an application is received and also when the ballot is returned? Again, I think that is detailed in the absentee ballot roadmap. There's a batch program, basically a batch program on CVRS for both the issuing of, for both the return of the applications and also the issuing of the ballots and the return of the ballots. So take a look at the absentee ballot roadmap in terms of getting an idea of how this voter reg is going to process that information. Okay. All right, the next question. Registrar of voters must create a sanitary safe polling locations for voters on primary day. If town halls are open to the public prior to primary, what is the expectation for the town clerks to keep the polling booths and town hall clean after each absentee voter? Can town clerks demand that voters receive their absentee ballots by mail? So a couple of things. One is that by sending out the applications to each and every voter, we're hoping that a bunch of the work with your office is done by mail. But to the extent of town clerks cleaning their office, I would just say that you should keep your office space clean pursuant to the CDC guidelines. I mean, this applies even if you're having somebody come in for a dog license or to file land records. I mean, it's not just a voting on the singular day or the weeks leading up to it. I mean, you should be following those guidelines with your land records, dog licenses, and fishing licenses, and all other things that you guys are doing. Does the notice of primary have to be in a newspaper, or can we simply put it on the web? It can be posted on the web now pursuant to one of the governor's executive orders that allow that information to be published on the town's website. Okay. All right, next question. My first selectman received a HAVA grant application from SOTS. I was unaware of this matching grant. Do you have further information to share? If not, I'd like to know why this was sent to the first selectman and not to the town clerks. So we sent the grant information out to the town clerks and registrars. And then after about a week or so, then we sent it out to the first selectman. And it's also posted on our website as well. Will the towns get reimbursed for all of their expenditures for the August election? If we are required to order 80% of absentee ballots, can we submit for additional costs? So the grants that we are offering are intended to supplement and not supplant local funding. We are already paying for the applications and the ballot mailings and the return mailings. So in order to receive a reimbursement, the town has to first give us their state plan, and then once we have their, their Safe Polls plan, and then once we have that and a application for reimbursement is submitted to our office, we'll review it with the town and we'll determine which of the costs will be eligible for reimbursement. We also have to, much like when we did our first round of reimbursements back in 2006-2007, we also have to follow any and all federal grant requirements, which then would flow to the town. So, for instance, if there's equipment that is purchased locally, then that equipment becomes federally funded grant equipment, which means that it has to be used in a specific way and cannot be disposed of without special permission. So all of those things are taken into account when we review a grant application for reimbursement. Will equipment purchased be reimbursed, additional computers, handheld scanners, et cetera? Computer equipment is subject to the 50% grant program, and the rest of the reimbursements would be subject to review by our office, similar to the question before that. Okay. All right. Next question. Must a voter wear a mask? Do we provide them with masks if they don't have one? Can a voter refuse? Please provide the process for us if a voter refuses. So this is one of those questions that I really don't have a full answer to yet. And the reason I don't is because, as I said before to the town hall question, this process is continually evolving. So what I can tell you right now is that right now, if the election were held today, everybody would have to wear a mask. And that is because there is a governor's executive order in place that requires anybody that is in public to wear a mask unless they fall under one of the specific healthcare categories, such as asthma or something, where preventing a mask is going to do them greater harm to their health than wearing one. However, as we get into late July and August, if more restrictions are lifted and the governor decides to eliminate that EO or to modify that EO so that people do not no longer have to wear masks in public, well, then that's a different story and we'd have to revisit it. So I don't know what the future holds for that, but I can tell you right now the governor's executive order is in place requiring the wearing of masks when people are in public. When are the mailboxes arriving and are town clerks the only ones with the keys? So the mailboxes will be mailed. They're being produced. What the vendor is going to do is when they start mailing out the mailboxes to the various towns, they're going to provide us with tracking numbers specific to each town that we will forward to each town so that you can personally view exactly where your shipment is and when it will arrive in your town. There is only one set of keys for the ballot box, and those will rest with the town clerk because the ballot box is absentee ballot oriented. Could you be specific as to what the Secretary of State it will be providing? Because if the Secretary of State is not going to supply what we feel necessary, we will need time to order the supplies. Okay. So what we are providing is that everybody should at least at this point know that we have bought Safe Polls kits for each one of the polling places, which includes masks, gloves, and sanitizers. We got some feedback from some registrars who said that particularly the gloves may not be enough. So we had the vendor also include an additional box of gloves in each one of those kits. So the additional box of gloves, I think, has 200 gloves in it. And a separate shipment. Each polling place is going to receive face shields for their poll workers, and we decided the face shields as opposed to the sneeze guards, because one, they were more cost effective, and two, it allows a poll worker to move around the polling place. So if an official checker gets up, they will still have a face shield on, as opposed to if they get up and there's a sneeze guard in front of them, they will have nothing in front of them. So those are the PPEs that we are supplying to each one of the towns and each one of the polling places. To the extent that there is additional either hand sanitizer or wet wipes or something that a town thinks they might need, certainly communicate with our office. And also we can look on the statewide purchasing program that they have going on for the COVID to see if some of that stuff is available. But right now, those are the PPEs that we have pre-purchased and will be mailed, sent to the towns. Is there a specific recommendation how to clean the privacy folders? Can they be eliminated? Of course, the privacy folders are an option of the voter. Right now, there is no EO in place to certainly eliminate them, but it would be the voter's choice. In terms of how to clean them, the only thing I can offer is to follow CDC guidelines, and also, you know, perhaps have an additional supply of the privacy booths. But that is an outstanding issue that we are currently working on with our group of registrars and clerks. Is curbside voting going to be required? It's not required, but it will remain available. The thing about curbside voting is this, and again, this is one of those issues that you know, if we were to know 100% what August environment would be, then we could offer specifics on it. But what we don't want is we don't want a polling place turning into a McDonald's drive-through, where, you know, every single voter is voting out of their car, which is going to require more poll workers and more processes in place. So nothing has changed regarding curbside voting in terms of the requirement for curbside voting, in terms of the reasoning for curbside voting. The way that we're handling it is that it is going to be available but not required. Can a moderator or other poll worker who cannot wear a mask because of a medical reason still work in the polling place? So again, this question really depends. I mean, this candidate probably should not be one of your first choices, particularly if the reason they can't wear a mask is because they have some underlying medical condition that prohibits them from wearing a mask, like asthma or something of that nature, which, as we know from the CDC, puts that individual at a higher risk of COVID infection anyways. You know, is there another job for that person? You know, would they be able to assist, you know, at the registrar's office on primary day or something of that nature? In addition, you know, other high-risk people like doctors or nurses or firemen, you know, perhaps those individuals should not be poll workers either. I mean, this is a good spot to sort of put in the pitch of why the deputy continues to urge people to, you know, get in their safe poll plans, because one of the categories of the safe poll plan is for you to determine right now, you know, the category or the pool of poll workers that you have, and any poll workers that might have issues, any poll workers that are not sure if they're going to be able to work, and also to identify a group of backup poll workers. And so, yes, I understand that it is June 4th and the election is in August, but certainly you can start talking to your poll workers individually to find out what their story is, to find out if they do have an underlying medical condition, those types of things. How far in advance can we test and program our tabulators before the election? Regulations require at least 10 days in advance, but you certainly can do that earlier. We are working feverishly with with the governor's office on the issue of ballot order and things of that nature, so we can get all of this information out earlier to everybody, so ballots can be prepared earlier, which means that then the ballots would be available for machine testing earlier. Is the mail house mailing out ballots with return postage paid? The answer to that is yes. Will we have the ability to combine polling locations? So we are just about ready to issue our guidance on the consolidation of polling places. This is one of the last pieces of guidance that we owe you regarding the COVID plan that we've recently issued. It was a piece of guidance that, you know, if you say it fast, why wouldn't we want to combine polling places? You think that would be relatively easy, but it is guidance that we had to be very careful about, you know, and I always go back to the fact that none of us, no city or town, wants to be in the news and be the next Milwaukee. There's several things to consider when you're talking about combining polling places. Yes, it's one thing to say that if we combine polling places because everybody's going to be voting by absentee ballot, then, you know, we have fewer poll workers. It'll be cheaper for us to do it in terms of town budgets that are struggling, etc. But on the other hand, you have to think that that if you start combining the polling places to the extent that you have the potential of a couple of thousand people showing up at a singular polling place and they actually do decide to show up, and now you have a line around the block, that is not productive either. So it's a balancing act, and so that's what has taken us so long with regard to the guidance on combining polling places. So it's in the final stages, and we'll be getting that out to you very soon. Can IVS be eliminated for the August primary? The answer to that is no. It's a federal requirement. So, and given the fact that presidential preference primary is one of the primaries in August, it's considered a federal election. So, no, it couldn't be eliminated, and it couldn't be eliminated in a normal non-COVID year. Why are the registrars required to be in their office on June 11th when our office is closed? June 11th is the deadline for filing of primary petitions, and so you have to be in your office to receive any primary petitions that come in, and also still be prepared to issue a primary petition for somebody locally if they decide that they want to run at the very last minute. Same holds true for the nominating petition deadline in August, where town clerks will be required to be in their office on that filing day. On the May 18th conference call, Deputy Bates said that the Connecticut National Guard will come into our office to assess security on our computers. Has the SOTS previously provided minimum security requirements for registrar's computers? I can't locate any. The computers in my office were set up long before I took the position. I want to make sure I know what to look for. So the answer to that is twofold. Is that no? There never really has been a formal security mechanism in place, and using the Connecticut National Guard was actually part of a longer plan by the secretary to enhance our cybersecurity protection. So it just so happens that we were able to engage the guard at this point, but this engagement has been long in the making. And the point of it is this, is that, this is probably a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for a town to get free, and I emphasize free, cybersecurity assistance from experts. And so your town should take full advantage of this. So it should not be that, when the National Guard contacts you to come out, if there is a IT professional in your town, you should really make sure that they're there. Even if it's somebody that you pay by the hour, you should really make sure that they're there. Because if the National Guard comes out and starts talking to you know, somebody who has no idea about computer networks or anything, then that free service is going to be literally useless to a town, and that really is not what we intend. So you should really look at this as an opportunity for your town to get a valuable service that, you know, that really hasn't been done ever. And so I think it's a great thing. Okay, so that was a full hour of me talking, and again, we tried to answer all of the questions that were submitted. And again, some of those questions may have been paraphrased, some of them may have been combined with other questions because they were similar in nature, but we really did try to answer all of the questions that were presented. So at this point, Mr. Deputy, I think we can open it up to a few more questions.
Yep, that sounds great, Ted. Thank you very much. Why don't you get a quick drink of water? Thank you for that tour de force. Those were, I believe, about 55 questions. We appreciate everyone on this call for putting in those questions and hope that those addressed your concerns. Anticipating that you might want to have that in writing as well, I can tell you a couple things. One is that the guidance that we've issued through the 23 individual guidance memos, we're going to be putting that together in a handbook that we will be sending out to each of you in the next coming weeks. So those will be brought up to date and put in a kind of readable form, like easy to use, so you have a playbook. And we will also have in that handbook frequently asked questions. So they'll essentially touch on everything that Ted just went through and kind of package it up in topical form. So, operator, I think we're ready to open up for some questions.
Certainly, if you would like to ask a question on the phone line, please press star 1 and record your name when prompted. Once again, that's unmute your phone, press star 1, and record your name when prompted. Our first question comes from Karen Dole Lyons. Ma'am, your line is open.
Good afternoon, everyone, or good morning, it's still morning. Couple of questions. Ted, you didn't answer if a person comes without a mask and it is required, are we required to give them a mask before they enter the polling place? I'll ask the questions one at a time if you'd like.
Yeah, that'd be great. So again, I don't really have an answer for that for you, Karen, because the only thing I can say is if the election were to be held right now, today, you know, the governor has the executive order that says that that, you know, individuals need to be wearing masks when they're in public. You know, is that something that we could turn a voter away? I think that would be involving some type of, you know, constitutional issue there. You know, is there another way that we could think about doing that? You know, perhaps that's an individual that, you know, that has to vote by curbside voting if they're going to be one of those individuals that requires, that says absolutely not, I'm not going to wear a mask. But we also have to remember that there are certain people out there who can't wear masks because
that's
of underlying medical conditions.
There are some that just will refuse to wear a mask just because.
Right, I understand that, but there are also people who medically can't.
Anyone.
Exactly. So, and there are also people who medically can't wear masks.
Correct.
And that is covered in both the EO and CDC guidance. So unless we're in the business of interviewing every person as to why they're not wearing the mask and their underlying medical conditions, I think that we can simply just advise them of the governor's executive order. But again, we have to see what the environment is in August and whether or not the executive order still is even in place.
I understand.
And it's a great question, and I'd suggest also that we'll get back to you with what the best practices and experience are of the now something like 10 or 11 states who have had elections with in-person voting in
okay,
this environment.
My next question is on the supply kit. it's one per polling site. What is a kit going to be given to the town clerk and the registrar of voters for our absentee ballot clerks? And will pens be included?
Will what be included?
Pens, marking pens.
Oh, okay. So the kits. So what we ended up doing with the kits is we sent an abundance of them to the towns. So technically we have, I think it's 710 polling places in use, and we used the number of 800 kits being sent to various towns. So to the extent that you receive one, remember the kit is going to have the masks. I think there's I think 20 masks in there. You'll have over 200 gloves, and you'll have the face shields. So to the extent that you have central counting absentee ballot people, I am making the assumption that you will be able to provide supplies to them out of the existing kits. In terms of the pens, we are feverishly working still with the local companies such as BIC, and I think Pilot's the other one, to see if they would work with us on providing the pen to each one of the polling places.
Okay. Then I'm assuming that once the ballot order is set and the ballots are now ordered, the memory cards and test sets will be sent out?
Correct.
And just a request, because Peggy Reeves and myself a couple of years ago had problems with curbside voting, and we know that that's the last-minute incapacity and able to get into the vote, which is a federal law, and it is abused quite a bit. If the Secretary of State could publicly make a press release stating that this is only to be used for last-minute incapacity, that our polling places are ADA compliant, that would help, because our local television is saying that everyone is getting an absentee ballot application. Well, that's not correct. We're getting calls and emails saying, I'm an unaffiliated voter. Why am I not getting an absentee ballot application? So we need to have some better description of what's going to be taking place, if the secretary could do that. I got a call from the selectman last week regarding the same thing.
Okay.
So that's just a suggestion. The other thing is, instead of privacy folders, we've discussed the possibility of having heavy stock means of paper, colored paper, that they can put over their ballot and then dispose of in a trash barrel with a liner on the way out. And I think
right.
That's
yeah, that, I mean, I think that's excellent. Right. I think that's excellent thinking. Yes.
I think that's about it. Thank you so much. I just want to make sure. Oh, do you have an opinion on the UV light as sanitizer?
No, I mean, I don't have any of the expertise in that, Karen. I mean, certainly I know that the CDC has recognized them, but I don't have any more information on that one.
Okay. And then, just the other question is, are we able to take temperatures of people going into the polling place prior to entrance?
I am hesitant to say yes on that. I don't think that that would be appropriate. I mean, I think that's going to be part of our voter, you know, outreach, that, you know, if you have a fever, you know, stay home, just like, you know, the governor has done now.
Okay, because it is required for doctor's offices and many other establishments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they don't have a constitutional right to vote in their office either, so. We have to balance that.
Thank you so much.
Okay,
thank
thanks.
You for all the hard work that you're doing. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Our next question comes from David Smith. Your line is open.
Ted Scott. Hunt and Company. Nicely done. Thank you very much for your assist today. I've got a couple of questions, one of which is by next Tuesday, the Democrats will probably have a candidate with enough votes to take the convention unquestioned. And, of course, the Republicans already done. Is there any need for a presidential primary at all, that being the case?
So we continue to, you know, work with the candidates on that. I mean, you're absolutely right that the current president has, you know, reached his delegate, and that Vice President Biden probably will as well. But the problem is that in our statute, the only way that we can cancel a primary is if the candidates that are involved sign with us a written letter of withdrawal, and that can be by email or whatever. And believe it or not, we have reached out to all three of the candidates that are in question, Gabby Tolsert, Rocky De La Fuente, and Bernie Sanders, and they all have emphatically said that they will not withdraw. So we're taking one more stab at them this week, given the results of the June 2nd primary. But unless they affirmatively withdraw from us, then we have to have the primary. And I think also a lesson learned from New York State is that even, you know, even if all well good intentioned, if the governor were to just unilaterally say, I'm going to cancel it, it likely would be overturned by a judge, and we'd have to have it anyways, which is exactly what happened in New York.
The governor has appealed that, I believe, in New York, has he not?
He has, but right now the court ruling is that they have to have it.
Okay. And if, indeed, they go over the top next Tuesday, it will be a done deal, and so maybe at that point it would be worth checking in with Bernie and Tulsi and Rocky, because it will be done. Now, at this point, it still technically is not done, but it probably will be almost assuredly by next Tuesday.
So, Dave, let me just say that our team has been in constant touch with them. They're not changing their minds, and it's Bernie Sanders' campaign stated position. They want to go to convention racking up delegates. So this game is on.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to follow the law, and all of us need to prepare for that. But that said, I assure you that we have one and two people that are still reaching out to make this happen, but all of us need to plan for this to happen in August.
Okay, one further question on the safety state supplies and so forth. Did you suggest, Ted, that there will not be any kind of a plexiglass shield for the checkers and so forth at tables and such supplied by the state?
Right. So what we did is we went the other way with it, and we're going to buy the face shields for the official checkers as opposed to the plexiglass shield. And just like I tried to explain, it provides them with greater mobility. And also, frankly, it was also a cost factor. I mean, there's only so many things that we can purchase for the towns, and it was more cost effective to do it that way than to provide the big plexiglass shields, which, again, if a poll worker, you know, leans or moves or stands up, they no longer have that protection, whereas the face shield, they do.
With the plexiglass shields, if the towns were to go for those themselves, could that be applied to the state recompense?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. And the pens, I guess, also, the suggestion is that people can and indeed should be encouraged to bring their own pens on the off chance that BIC and the other, whoever that was, is not able to do it. Their own pens will be good enough if indeed they choose to bring them.
Yep. As long as it's blue or it's black, it will be read by the scanner.
Okay. Hey, thank you all very much. Lots of work still to do.
Our next question comes from Phil Giesen. Your line is open.
Good morning or afternoon, whatever your case may be, Ted. I just need a clarification for a second, please, on the ballots. You said 80% of the ballots are the ballot's going to be identical as to being polling place and absentee, so we're only ordering 80%, or are we ordering 80% absentee, 80% of polling place?
So the way that we're doing it with the print house is with Atkins and with LHS is, I think we've narrowed it down to two different ballots, an absentee ballot and a polling place ballot. Both will be identical, but there'll be additional coding on there so that if you're running everything through the same tabulator, at least it will give you the absentee ballot count separately, whereas if we actually coded them all the same and you ran them through the same tabulator, then there would be no way to distinguish them. So that's the way that we came to it with the mail house and with Atkins and LHS. So there'll be actually each town will have two different ballot styles.
Okay, thank you. And the other question I had one. The questions I keep getting from a lot of people, which I assume I didn't want to make sure I said something that would be wrong, but they will be separate party ballots, correct?
Yes, they'll be separate party ballots. That's correct. Yes, that's correct.
Okay, well, that's a start, and I'm working on the St. Paul's plan. We're not going to be able to give the actual names of workers, just the numbers at this point. That will be acceptable?
Yeah, that's understandable. We understand that.
Okay. Thank you for your help.
Our next question comes from Nancy Ryan. Your line is open.
Thanks, and thanks, everybody, for all the hard work you're doing. My initial question was about pens. That's already been answered. But we also have kind of a question, kind of a comment, where we have five voting districts. We are actually having a primary in the state Senate district, which covers three of our polling places. So those ballots are obviously going to need to be different than the presidential preference primary ballots. And we do have the ability, at least in one polling location, to have two of our districts, which are both in that state Senate district, combined into one location, which means we need fewer poll workers. I don't think we'll be overcrowded and have long lines like there were in Milwaukee. We created a plan to keep the poll worker or the voters in safe distance lines and extended outside if need be. But, you know, we basically need to know how EMS is going to be set up and how we're going to be reporting. If we can combine those two districts and have just one checker, et cetera, it would be quite helpful.
Okay, so in terms of EMS, in terms of for the presidential preference primary, we only actually need a townwide total. So for those towns that are just having a presidential preference primary, that's all we need is a townwide total. For the towns that are having a combined primary of some type of local, then of course that vote total does have to be broken out by the particular district. So there would be a chance that you would have a couple of different districts in EMS. And again, in terms of the reduction of poll workers or polling places, I think that is something that we would have to review individually with your town once we issue the reduction of polling place guidance that I said that I promised that we were going to get in the next few days to you, because again, you know, there has to be, you know, in terms of reducing the number of polling places, you know, we have to take into account, you know, election electors and the number of them and all these other kind of things. So be on the lookout for that.
Okay, so we'll look for it, and then if we have further, you know, we'll get in touch with you and see if we could perhaps.
Correct.
Combine. Thanks.
Yes, thank you.
Our next question comes from Ms. Burke. Your line is open. Ms. Burke, your line is open.
Yes. Am I on or not?
Yes, you are now. Yep.
Okay. Can you explain what happens to the voter who registers after the initial mailing of the applications for absentee ballots and they register with the party? How will they receive their application for an absentee ballot?
So those individuals would need to actually receive an absentee ballot either off of our website or from the town or the town clerk or any of those different methods.
Okay, thank you.
Hello, operator. I think we have time for
more calls. I think we're good. Yeah.
Okay. Our next question comes from Kathy Grace. Your line is open.
Hi, Ted. You might have said it, and I might have missed it, but I was wondering how many face shields are in that Safe Polls kit that we'll be getting.
How many face shields?
Yeah.
Okay. The face shields. I think that we're sending. I think it's a package of 29 or 30, I think, something of that nature. It's around there.
Okay.
It's a pretty big number.
Ryan, you said something about for the checkers, so then I wasn't sure if other workers like ballot clerks would need them too.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Anybody can use them. The question was just posed as
so there'll be a bunch of them then. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Very good. And then I have just one other question. Several times you referred to the absentee ballot roadmap that had been sent out. Did that just go to town clerks? Because I didn't recall getting one. Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. You're welcome.
Our next question comes from Mark Bernacki. Your line is open.
Thank you, Scott and Ted. Great job. I think this was a better format in answering a lot of our questions, so thank you for that. Just so happened to be a lot of agita in the field because now all these changes are going to be made during a presidential cycle, and I think that's what's leading to a lot of apprehension. A couple additional questions. The first one is in your roadmap document, you talked about eligible voter. Does that mean active voters only?
Yes.
Okay. Second one, there was a question about undeliverables coming back. If that information is in the upper left-hand corner of the envelope, that's who's going to be receiving all of these undeliverables. Now, is it going to the town clerks? Is it going to the registrars? Who's going to be receiving back that volume of envelopes?
So it's going to come back to the town clerks, and they can forward them on to the registrar. I think it'll be very useful for their upcoming canvass.
Okay. With the absentee ballot applications that are coming back, are you going to exclude the checkoff box saying given to me personally so the town clerk offices are not overrun with people coming to the office?
No, we haven't changed any of those procedures.
Okay. And the last question I have is on the CVRS system. I just went on, and it's still the old system. We're not able to batch that front-end process where the serial numbers are going to be automatically updated. When is that going to become available? Because we can't really put the permanents or the existing mailed-in applications yet unless we put those serial numbers in. And if we do that, is the mailhouse going to override that with whatever our town address is based on your roadmap document?
No. If you go ahead and put in a serial number now, it's just going to go over in a data field to the mailhouse, and they'll use whatever serial number is in there. They're not overriding anything.
Okay. So then we're going to still have to track those numbers as we put them in. And then those people will not get the application since they've already sent it in to us.
Right. Exactly. The individuals that you've put into the system as already receiving an application will not be individuals that receive an additional application.
Okay. And when do you think the new front end will be available for us to start testing?
We are working on that right now with them. I believe that we gave them a deadline of mid-June to get it done. So in the next couple of weeks, they should have that coding process done.
Excellent, because if we start getting these back in mass and we have several people entering the data in, we just want to make sure that a unique number is given to each individual voter and there's no cross-contamination with the same serial numbers going out. Thank you.
Yep.
That's all I have. Thanks.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Mark, and I think we have time for one more question.
Okay. Carrie Latimer, your line is open.
Thank you. Two questions. One, it was asked earlier, but I didn't think it was answered. Should we be ordering 80% twice, 80% for the ABs and 80% for the polling place?
Yes.
Okay. And second is, when can we expect the safe poll kits to be sent out?
The poll kit.
Well, I can help answer that. Make sure you have your safe polls plan in and approved. So once we have that, we will send the kit to you.
Okay. Approved by whom?
By our office. So we have right now, we have election support teams for each congressional district. We've just hired up an additional person to work with each team, and they're reaching out to each of you over the course of this week and next to check on the status of your plan and if you need any questions answered or any help, and get the approvals going so we can get these out to you.
Okay, thank you.
You bet. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very, very much indeed. This has been helpful for us as well, and we'll, of course, be in touch and do more calls in the future. But I think it was helpful for us to have the time to go through all your questions in advance and answer them. So we will be, as I said, getting out a handbook to everybody in the weeks ahead. It will include the answers to these questions and updates on all the guidance that we're getting according to the latest developments, relative to the pandemic. So on behalf of Secretary Merrill and Ted and everybody on our team, thank you for being great partners, and we'll look forward to talking again soon. Thank you.
This concludes your conference, and you may disconnect. Once again, your conference has ended, and you may disconnect. Thank you for joining.